Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Relationships Rocked, what promises to be a magical episode. Today, we're talking magical relationship advice from that wizarding world of Harry Potter. And joining me in this really fun discussion is a friend of mine, Kelly Regal Schwartz, who is a huge Harry Potter fan. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure. I'm so excited.
Actually, somebody asked me, like, who are you going to have in the episode? And I said, oh, it's a friend of mine from high school. She's like a huge Harry Potter fan. And they were like, for sure, I can beat her in like Harry Potter trivia. And I was like, I'm not sure about that. growing up, Ellie had the US version of the book, the British version of the book.
First edition of the seventh book.
I remember that. And the audiobook.
All of the above. And my birthday is July 31st, which is Harry Potter's birthday and J.K. Rowling's birthday. So
wow,
it's just a magical connection from the start.
Exactly. And, you know, for anyone here who's joining us who's not a Harry Potter fan, there really are so many rocks and gems in this book. It is so deep. I feel like there's so many levels to this book. You know, it is a children's book, but there's also all of these messages and themes. So if you're not a Harry Potter fan, you could still listen in. I think you're going to gain some really beautiful insights. And if you are a Harry Potter fan, then pull out your butterbeer. Come with us, trip down memory lane. So what makes Harry Potter so magical? I was actually trying to think about this because, so the way this idea came about is I had posted on my status, oh, upcoming episode, guess what it is? And I had like ghosts and zombies because I was doing the narcissist episode last week. Mm-hmm. And someone said Harry Potter. And I was like, wait, am I allowed to have this much fun and make a Harry Potter episode? Like, I'm not sure if that's allowed. And then I was like, wait, I really could do it. And really, I'm not even joking. For like 3 days, I was on a high, like just reminiscing. Like I was back in like the Universal Studios, you know, Hogsmeade and like, you know, Oliver's
Wand.
Did
you go?
I went 12 years ago.
Me too.
I went when like it had just started. And same. I actually remember because, so they didn't have a lot of stuff. Ollivander's Wand Shop, and they had, you know, Hogwarts. And I remember when you go into the wand shop, they have this, like, they ask for a volunteer. So obviously, yes. I was, like, screaming, like, me, choose me. And, like, they chose, like, a five-year-old kid. I'm like, he didn't even read the books. Like, I can quote you the books. Like, you need to choose me for this. And my sister was, like, really embarrassed. She's like, Raquel, you're, like, in your 20s. Like, it's okay. And I'm like, but I'm the Harry Potter fan.
But we're the ones that grew up with it.
Yeah. You know, so I was thinking, like, what is it about it that is so magical? And I think for a lot of people, it really was this escape, this magical place that you could go to, you know, not in a negative sense of like, oh, I want to run away from my life. No, not like that. Just in the sense of I have somewhere to go to that is safe, that is fun, that is magical. I mean, you know, I have memories of quote unquote getting lost in the Hogwarts castle, you know, and all the delicious food in the Great Hall, you know, the mashed potatoes and the gravy and the roast and all the pumpkin flavored stuff.
And we were lucky to experience it before devices, before the movies even.
Yeah.
So it was just purely, that was our entertainment. That was our imagination.
You know, I think it's important in life to have positive ways to deal with stress and anxiety and life. And people might think like, oh, children and teenagers, what stress do they have? And sometimes even children and teenagers, especially adults, need a place to go. And I think that's what's so magical about Harry Potter. Like, regardless of what was happening in your life, whether you had family issues, money issues, like, these are all themes that are in Harry Potter. I mean, Harry Potter himself is an underdog. He has no love. He has no parents. He has no money, you know, like, and they're all really average kids. Like, even Hermione, like, she's just average looking. We love you, Hermione. I'm saying, like, I'm not trying to offend you. I'm just saying,
no judgment.
It's very relatable, you know?
And I think that, especially for kids in middle school and high school, you underestimate, I'm a high school teacher, so I'm sort of back in that world. You underestimate how much friend drama can really affect you.
Yeah.
And I think that was like a little bit therapeutic at the time to have someone else going through friend drama in different ways.
Yeah.
And processing through that.
And you should know, like, it's been a really hard decision for me to decide for my kids not to read Harry Potter. Hashkafically, I'm just raising my kids differently than how I was raised. No judgment if you are, you know, reading Harry Potter currently. Just for me, it was a choice. And because, again, it was so magical. But yeah, but like, I do think part of the magic of Harry Potter was that it was this place, this safe place you could go to that was so much fun. And if you wanted to, you could look at the depth. So that's what we're going to do today. we're going to talk about different themes that come up in Harry Potter and different quotes and analyzing. And again, if you are a Harry Potter fan, I hope you're so excited. And if you're not a Harry Potter fan, I still think you could gain a lot. One of the biggest themes in Harry Potter is love, which is funny because it's a children's book, but it really is, I would say, like the running theme. Actually, I would say love and death, right, Ellie? Kind of like these like two sides.
Yeah.
And, you know, Albus Dumbledore, who's, you know, a big character in the book, always says it's the strongest magic. And we're talking about relationships here. So obviously we're going to talk about love. And anyone that knows me or has heard like any of my podcasts, you know that it's hashtag love yourself. Like I'm huge into that. And I actually think Harry Potter has a lot of themes into that. So let's start with like one of the best quotes. So Albus Dumbledore tells Harry, quote, "Do not pity the dead, Harry, pity the living, and above all, those who live without love." So there is another quote. So Harry Potter's mother passed away. Well, passed away sounds peaceful. She was killed. And she died to protect Harry. And Albus Dumbledore says, "Love as powerful as your mother's for you leaves its own mark."
Which for Harry was a literal mark and a metaphorical. And Harry carries that with him throughout the entire series, that if it wasn't for his mother's love, he wouldn't be there. And if it wasn't for his mother's love, he wouldn't have the powers to conquer Voldemort and conquer evil the way he ended up being able to do that.
No, but ultimately, for Harry, it is him trying to discover what is this magic? Because Dumbledore's always telling him, you have a magic that's more powerful than Voldemort, who's, by the way, a classic narcissist, if you listen to last week's episode, and a sociopath also.
100%.
So, you know, he's trying to figure out, what is this magic? Like, what is so powerful about being loved? And it's only at the end of the seventh book that he realizes, wait a second, Voldemort, the fact that you are not capable of loving is blinding you. Like, that is what has made you mess yourself up and do things in a very selfish way that didn't allow you to kind of see the big picture. And what I think is so powerful about this is, you know, your relationship with your own mother, the love you have with your own mother, is so powerful in building your future relationships. You know, there's a whole concept of like attachment theory. I feel like I've mentioned it on the podcast before. I actually, whenever I do like coaching sessions, it's one of the things we discuss, if that ends up being a pattern. And what happens is the relationship you had with your mother or your primary caregiver, but usually it's the mother that represents the emotional aspect, ends up creating a pattern for how you attach and give and receive from other people. You can, of course, work on it, but that ends up being your pattern. I think it's so profound that she's mentioning this, like powerful, like you, like the love of your mother is so powerful that it sticks with you forever in a positive and in a negative way.
Well, and it's interesting you say that, because if you zoom out a little bit, Voldemort and Harry really had similar upbringings. They were both orphans. They were both raised not by their mothers, but the way that Voldemort was abandoned was not at all the way that Harry was. Harry's mother protected him and died for him to the last breath, and Voldemort's didn't. So even something so, you know, pre-verbal made such a big difference for the rest of, like, the trajectories of their lives were completely different.
And I think it's interesting you bring this up, because they were both orphans, they were both underdogs, and yet, even with whatever background you come from, you have the ability to have the most powerful magic of all. And this is why, total spoiler alert, if anyone read the quote-unquote eighth book, the play, that is why I, like, couldn't stand it, because because it makes it seem like Harry has an issue with one of his sons, which I just found so unrealistic. Like, to me, it was just like a complete character clash, because Harry would never tell one of his kids, I wish you weren't born. Like, that would have just never happened, because on the contrary, Harry, who was an orphan raised by his aunt and uncle who hated him, had this really big ability to love. And I felt like that whole thing was, I kind of just look at it as like fan fiction.
Yeah,
like, really,
it's not canon. We don't have to talk
about it. No, it's totally not canon. I know Ellie's like, Raquel, no, it's not part of it. Now, what's interesting is you mentioned about Voldemort's mother, who she didn't really have, you know, real love for him. And that's because, and I'm gonna give you two quotes here on fake love. One of them is Professor Slughorn says it's impossible to manufacture or imitate love. And the other one is, when you have seen as much life as I have, you will not underestimate the power of obsessive love. I find this to be an interesting aspect of love to discuss, which is not real love, obsessive love, and kind of the infatuation aspect, which is not deep, which happens in all relationships. Like the infatuation is kind of like what gets you there.
Yeah.
But then you have to kind of develop like the
depth. Can't stay there.
You know, Voldemort's mother basically gives a love potion to Voldemort's father. Like, it tricks him into quote-unquote loving her. And, you know, she ends up tricking him, giving him this love potion every day or whatever it is. And until one day she's like, oh, maybe he finally fell in love with me. And she stops giving him the potion. He obviously wakes up from this trance, is disgusted with her, and kind of leaves. And what I think is such a powerful kind of parallel here, or just really mushal for life, is that, you know, you can't trick anyone into loving you. You can't trick anyone into being in a relationship with you. It's not real. It won't last. And this is why it's so important to be honest in relationships, to share the things that are ugly. His mother, Merope, was quite ugly, according to J.K. Rowling, no judgment. But in the book, she's described as being just really physically ugly. And sometimes we think, well, if we just cover these ugly parts of ourselves, then the other person will be tricked, and then they're stuck. And nobody ever likes to be stuck. It is not a romantic feeling. And even if you think we've built depth, when they find out the truth, it will kind of just all fall apart.
Yeah, no, she robs herself of the opportunity of finding someone who would have loved her just the way she was. And then that would have passed on that love to her children. And then we wouldn't have had a Voldemort.
I know, it would have been a different book, but I love that you say that, because a lot of times people are stuck on going after the wrong thing or whatever. They're like, but I want this, like obsessive love, fixated. You know? Yeah. And it's like, but that's not good for you. You know, this is why the quote says, you will not underestimate the power of obsessive love. Sometimes we get so stuck in our heads, not even just with a specific person, but with a certain image of what we expected, of what we want. You know, I've had a girl say to me, but like, I always wanted to marry very tall. And I'm like, I get that. Like, you know, we all have an image in our head of what the person looks like. At some point, we have to kind of make sure we're being realistic with the image that we want, and also not obsessing over something that doesn't want us back.
Yeah, because it only ends up hurting ourselves in the long run.
But there's actually this theme in this book of unrequited love, of chasing after the thing that doesn't want you. And at some point, you have to recalculate and say, okay, if this path is not working, you know, where else can I go? So there's another quote actually related to this. So Arthur Weasley, who's Ron's father, one of the trio, tells Rumus, Lupin, who is a werewolf. So he has very low self-esteem in terms of, he thinks nobody likes him and nobody will accept him. And there's a girl who's really into him, okay, Tonks. And she's like, you know, chasing him. And he kind of keeps pushing her away because he feels like, I'm unworthy of your love, which, by the way, is a huge theme of its own, of this, of feeling like we're not worthy of receiving. And I actually think it's highly correlated to attachment theory and our relationship with our own mothers and how we learn to give and receive. But anyways, Arthur has this beautiful line, and he says to him, but she wants you. Like, who cares if you think that she's too good for you? She wants you. She likes you.
It's the same theme as the obsessive love, but like sort of the inverse. It's like, get out of yourself for a minute, you know, and not just what you're fixated on, which is either this is exactly what I want and this is the only way, or she can't possibly want me. I can't possibly be lovable. Just get out of yourself for a minute and see the other person. And if that person, you know, really does want you or really does not want you, see reality for what it is. And when you're so wrapped up in your own self, which, you know, Voldemort takes to a dangerous degree, your own self, your own goals, everything, that then you're blind to what life can offer you in a beautiful way.
But I do think, by the way, if you ever feel like someone is unworthy of you, it is important to work on your self-esteem, because I do think it's the number one issue that happens, you know, that affects marriages, like Shalom Bayit, is feeling unworthy of receiving. I was just speaking to somebody this recently, you know, like, you have to be able to say in a marriage, in a relationship, I want X, I need Y. and feeling worthy of receiving that, like feeling like I'm able to express myself and also receive that. So, you know, and this is why actually in the seventh book, I didn't really like Lupin so much. I felt like he was being so mean to his wife. I felt really uncomfortable. Like he kept kind of like ditching her and pushing her away. He just felt so unworthy of her, of her love. And he didn't realize how much he was hurting her by mm-hmm. pushing her away, which stemmed from this low self-esteem.
That's true. But in the seventh book, I think he was, a lot of them just were under such incredible amount of pressure. They were in this war, yeah. and war turns people into all sorts of things that is, mm-hmm. is not true to who they are.
Yeah. There's another quote by Albus Dumbledore. He says, "We can't choose our fate, but we can choose others. Be careful in knowing that."
This is very similar to the quote, you can't change the people around you, but you can change the people around you.
Yeah. Wow. I love that quote.
It's so good.
It took me a second to be like, what is it saying? I love that. Yeah, right.
Yeah. So you can't, it's a deep recognition of what is in your control and what can you choose. No, you can't manipulate and mold everybody around you into who exactly mm-hmm. you want them to be, but you can mold your environment and you can choose to be surrounded by the people who will uplift you and change your life.
Yeah. And I think another theme here is, you know, Harry is an orphan. He has no family. And yet he creates his own family. He kind of chooses the people who are going to be a support system for him. And, you know, for anyone here who has issues in their family, which if you're human, there's probably at least one. Yeah. And it's very hard to kind of come to terms with that, depending on how difficult it is of like, wow, like, why do I get messed up parents? Why do I get messed up siblings and situations? And yes, there are things in your life that you can't control, but there are things that you can. And one of the things you can control is the people who you allow in your life. And I actually have plans of having an episode on just family dynamics and kind of boundaries with unhealthy family members. But I'm a huge believer that even if someone is family, if they're hurting you, you are allowed to put a boundary. You are.
Correct.
You know, you're allowed to choose, kind of like the quote says, Ali, like, okay, you can't change the people around you. You can't. This is your family. This is who's there. But you can say, I don't want to be around this.
I think another way of thinking about it, I heard this actually from like a dietitian or something. It's like, instead of thinking about, I got this concept from a dietitian, but you'll see how it connects in a minute. Okay. That instead of demonizing food and saying, okay, this food is bad and I'm going to cut it out of my life, instead crowd it out with good foods. Okay. So, you know, at your Shabbos table, everyone loves like the challah and dips. That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. You could still have that, but you could also put a bunch of, I don't know, carrot sticks and peppers and other things, crowd it out so that there's lots of good to choose from also. And I think it's the same with people. I don't think this is about, you know, just cut out the toxic, unhealthy people in your life. Like, mm-hmm. especially with family, it's not that simple, but you can bring in and spend more time with people who uplift you and who are good for you without cutting out other people. It will just change the ratio of your time. Does that make sense?
I like that. It's funny you mention it as like a food marshal, because an advice I once heard years ago, which changed my perspective on how you look at food in many ways, was don't be so focused on what you take out. Be more focused on what you put in. You know, sometimes we approach food as like, oh, I can't eat this, I can't eat that, I can't eat that. Instead of looking at it as like, what am I eating that is nourishing my body, you know, and is being good for me? And kind of, instead of looking at a plate of food and saying, oh, this is bad. It's like, what else can I add that is going to make it better? So there's another quote that I want to mention here in the context of love, which is Fleur, who is, who's French. So she ends up marrying Ron's oldest brother, who also happens to be very good looking, but he has his face scratched by a werewolf. So he quote unquote loses his good looks. So his mother, who does not like Fleur because she thinks she's like superficial and just like way too pretty and just like so not, you know, she wants like a real hardworking woman, self-made, and that's not Fleur. says to her, well, now that he's ugly, you could, you know, get out. Like, it's fine. Don't worry if you want to break the wedding. And she gets very offended, you know, and she's like, why would I want to break the wedding? And she has this line. She says, what do I care how he looks? I am good looking enough for the both of us, I think. All the scars show that my husband is brave.
I love that. That was such a shining moment for her.
It was, because you see that within this superficial, she really did love him. And I actually love that. You know, what do I need him to be good looking for? I'm good looking enough for the both of us. Love, especially in dating, there's a lot of focus on looks. And when really looks are the most depreciating factor about you in life, like anything about you in life should go up, all of your traits and characters and everything. But looks and age, you know, like looks and youth are depreciating, like just because of life. So kind of related to love is this whole concept of friendship, which is really the basis of every relationship. You know, when people ask me, how do you make shidduchim? I'm not as involved now, more focused on coaching, but I used to. And I would always say, like, my winning formula was looking at hashkafa, making sure that matched, and then looking at friendship. Would they get along personality? Because I really do feel like if you have a good friendship, that's really the basis for any relationship. And especially in Harry Potter, where Harry doesn't have a lot of family, friendship really becomes this almost like family theme as well.
Yeah, I agree. It actually kind of connects to what Floor was saying, because, you know, like you said, I think there's an infatuation part when you first start a relationship, and maybe there is an aspect of, you know, attraction to each other, and that's a wonderful thing, but it's depreciating. So what's left as time goes on is your friendship, is that solid basis. And, you know, Floor recognized that, you know, all these scars show is that my husband is brave. There's these underlying values that she loved about him. And that's really what makes a friendship, is you have these shared values that you respect in each other, that really stand the test of time.
Yeah. And I would say, like, the quote that stands out in friendship is probably with Neville Longbottom, who's such an interesting character, because in many ways he's like the foil of Harry, or kind of like this parallel story to Harry. Like, he could have become Harry Potter. And he ends up standing up to Harry, which is really scary for him because he's not the most brave person. For whatever reason, he ended up in Gryffindor. And Albus Dumbledore praises him and says, it takes a great deal of bravery to stand up to our enemies, but just as much to stand up to our friends.
Such a great quote.
And I think so this quote is very applicable to the whole high school dynamics you're talking about, when you are in high school and you're struggling with a lot of things with friends.
And there's this so much peer pressure.
Yeah, peer pressure. And it speaks directly to that. Like, yeah, it is brave to stand up to a bad kid who's bullying and say, hey, don't do that. But it's much harder to stand up to your close group of friends and say, hey, guys, like, I'm not sure I feel comfortable with that. Or that's not nice. Like, let's not do that. And in high school, that can be really difficult to do.
Very, very. I mean, I have a 9-year-old going on 19. And I think half of our conversation is of what's going on with her friends is just this, that my friends say this, and my friends say that. And I feel pressured, or I feel left out, or, and I, it's hard to defend yourself and stand your ground on what you believe is right, when your friends who you love, who you play with, who are your life at that age, maybe are not going to agree with you.
So we actually had Rabbi and Mrs. Shockett a few episodes ago, and they were saying how in their school, Hadar, which is where Ellie works, I know, guys, totally nepotism here. I stick with I stick with the people that I know. They actually do like training for their high schoolers in terms of, they do like workshops in terms of communicating. And I found it so amazing. Now, an advice actually from Sirius Black, who's one of my favorite characters, that I think is a really good advice for when you're on dates and stuff. You know, he says, if you want to know what a man's like, take a look. If you want to know what a man's like, take a good look at how he treats his inferiors, not his equals. I happen to think that's great advice when you're on dates with somebody.
Yeah, how they treat the waiter.
How they treat the waiter, and how they also speak about people. You know, are they putting people down? Are they lifting people up? It's very subtle, but, you know, it's very easy to treat people who are higher than you or equal to you in a good way, because you have a benefit to that. But the people who you have no benefit on, you know, how are you treating those people? I think it really speaks about character. And then the last quote I want to talk about in the friendship section is probably one of my favorite quotes. So in the seventh book, Ron Weasley runs away from Harry and Hermione. He kind of gets sped up for many reasons. And he ends up coming back because he had this gift called the Deluminator from Albus Dumbledore, which is really magical. And wherever you wish to go, kind of like a light comes and you kind of can jump in and go there. So when he finally comes back, Harry's like, how did you find us? I mean, they were like with enchantments, like it'd be impossible to kind of get to them. So he says, oh, I used what, you know, Albus Dumbledore gave to me. And, you know, he kind of says ashamed, he must have known I'd run out on you. And Harry Potter responds, no, he must have known you'd always want to come back.
Brings like tears.
I know.
I remember being so emotional when I read it, like the first time.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful quote because, wow. I mean, to me, it actually feels a lot like Aser Ime Tshuva. You know, when we move away, Lehavdil. Yeah. But like when we move away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and, you know, and it's like, but he knows that you want to come back. But that's a really beautiful quote, just also in terms of friendship. Of there are times in friendships where there's just moments that are just you're clashing and you kind of got to take a step away. And by the way, since friendship is the basis for any relationship, it could be any relationship. It could be with your spouse. It could be with your the person you're dating with a parent, with a sibling, where you just kind of need space, but ultimately, you know, you find your way back to each other, even during fights and all of that.
And I love how the focus is, it's kind of taken for granted. Like, yes, there are going to be times that you need space and you are going to walk out, so to speak, to catch your breath. And that's okay, as long as there's a path back. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, having that in any relationship where you give each other permission, okay, there's going to be times where we fight and we need to take a step back, but we know that we're always going to come back and figure it out. As long as you have that, it just gives a lot more freedom in a relationship to be yourself and do teshuvah. Teshuvah is just a constant ongoing process between us and Hashem, between us and all of our relationships. So I love how you framed it that way.
Yeah. And it's also a concept within ourselves, you know, looking in the mirror and kind of forgiving ourselves. And actually a big theme in Harry Potter is being yourself. There's a quote by Hagrid, you know, he says, I am what I am. I'm not ashamed. Never be ashamed. My old dad used to say, there are some who hold it against you, but they're not worth bothering with. Now, I happen to love Hagrid because he is this, you know, odd man who literally sticks out. He's huge.
In every way.
But I think he has such love. And really, this quote really shows that, you know, like, don't be ashamed, you know, whatever packet you were given to by God, that's what came with you. You know what I mean?
Well, it's what you're meant to have.
Yeah. And anyone who's going to hold it against you, they're not worth bothering with. And I want to connect this back to the whole idea of like thinking that if you hide the ugly parts of yourself, you're going to trick somebody, you know, or like, you know, once you tell them, it won't matter. The person who is meant for you will not hold it against you. They will see it as a part of you. Even if it's a part that they don't love or that they prefer wasn't there, they understand that it comes with a big package, but they're not going to shame you for it. They're going to be able to, you know, sometimes when people come to me and ask, like, should I reveal this thing, whatever that thing is, whether it's something in the past or an issue they're dealing with. And there's a lot of fear in revealing the ugly parts of ourselves. And in every relationship you're in, you know, even if you think, oh, my situation is the worst, everyone has a skeleton in the closet or just a circumstance that they feel nervous sharing. And ultimately, when you're dating someone, you're seeing if this person can be the right partner for you. And the right partner for you has to be the right support system for you. And if you're going to need X, Y, and Z, you're not helping yourself by trying to trick somebody or not share this part of yourself. Obviously, how to share it, what to share, do you have to share is like a whole different topic and more one-on-one. But I kind of just want to put that out there.
Yeah, I think that being authentic and being genuine is like your built-in filter. What kind of friends and what kind of relationships you're allowing in your life that will be supportive, you know? And I mean, I've had to tell my kids this all the time. When this person makes fun of me for this or makes fun of me for that. I'm like, then they're not meant for you. They're not meant to be your friend. If this is something about you that they can't appreciate, but this is who you are, then you got your answer. This is choose somebody else.
Yeah, I think that's the hardest part for kids, but also something that gets lost in adults too. You know, when I used to teach for a little bit, I taught like younger kids, and you see them all going after the cool kids. Like everybody wants to play with the cool kids. And at some point you're like, but you have friends you could play with. Like there are people who want to be a part of your life. But if you're so busy looking at that closed door, you're not going to see the doors that are open behind you. And I feel like that's a message that unfortunately it takes a lot of time sometimes. Yeah, sometimes when you're much older. There's another quote by Albus Dumbledore. He says, it matters not what someone is born, but what they grow to be.
I mean, that sums up childhood and adolescence so beautifully. And I think that's really pervasive, like throughout the journey of the seven books. And I think, I mean, it's kind of what's so beautiful about our generation, because the first book came out when we were like 8 or 9, and the last book came out when we were 17, which is
you're like really aging ourselves here, Ellie. Like, do you want to announce how old we are?
But listen. But because all of these lessons pervade through the books, it really showed us as we were growing up, we're going to make all of these dumb mistakes that Harry and his friends make. But that's not the end of the story. And we forget sometimes, even with our own kids, like, oh, just grow up already. But that's literally the avoda of their lives. It's our avoda as parents to help them to get there. But there's so much potential in the time that's given to you to grow to who you want to be.
It's the journey. I always say life is a journey. Dating is part of your journey. We become the right person in our journey. You know, I believe there's a Perkei Avot quote. I'm totally not going to get it right, but something of do not judge yourself until your last day, because it's only in the last day that you will know exactly what your life was.
Look back and see the full picture.
Yeah. And I think this quote also speaks to the whole, really the underlining theme of the underdog in Harry Potter, and how it doesn't matter if you have things that are being held against you. You can rise above all of it. Yeah, you may not get maybe the shidduch that you want because all your friends have that shidduch because of whatever circumstance you have, whether it is money or looks or yichus or whatever, but you could still become the best person that you can become. You know, everyone is born with like a certain bucket of good and bad. And some people, you know, it's up to us to kind of how we utilize it.
Kind of echoes back to the similar origins of both Harry and Voldemort. They were born into similar kind of circumstances, but they grew to be so different based on the choices that they made.
Which leads to the next quote, you know, it is our choices, Harry, that show what we truly are far more than our abilities.
It's so classic. I mean, that sums up the whole series, I feel like. And even Yiddishkeit, like it's ingrained in us that it's everything is up to what we decide to do, and not what the circumstances we've been placed in.
Yeah, and also not your abilities. It doesn't matter what you were born with. It's what you chose to do. You know, your actions speak much louder than words, you know? And there's another quote very similar to this. We've all got both light and dark inside us. What matters is the part we choose to act on. That's who we really are.
Yeah, I mean, Sirius Black is a closet chassid.
I guess he is. But it's also this concept of Harry and Voldemort could have become the same person. You know, in the first book, which again, is like it's magical on its own, like basic level of like a story. Harry gets to Hogwarts and they get sorted into houses. I don't know if anyone here has ever sorted themselves into houses. I obviously have sorted my entire family into houses. I originally got Ravenclaw, and then I took it again and again until I got Gryffindor, which might be like a Ravenclaw thing to do. I'm not entirely sure. But what's interesting is, so Harry Potter goes ahead and he gets sorted into the house, and the sorting hat goes on his head and says, you know, you could be in Slytherin if you wanted to. Like, you could do great things in Slytherin. And he says, no. Like, I don't want to be on Slytherin, because he heard that it was like a bad house to be in. And it's amazing, because that's really, it comes full circle at the end of the books, which is we all have light and darkness inside of us. And sometimes we think, especially when we've done things we're ashamed of, or we've, you know, done things that we wish nobody would ever find out about, we think, oh my gosh, like I'm a dark person. Like that must mean that I'm a bad person. And no, you're not bad. You know, there's black and white. I actually heard this from Rebbitz and Raquel Kierenzenbaum. She said how when you look at a picture, there's different colors on it, right? There's red, there's blue, there's white, there's black. It's easier to place people in like a black and white scale. It's much harder to realize that life has both light and darkness, and that people have both light and darkness. And I found that to be so profound.
And I think, and Harry actually, he is confronted with this again with his son on his first day of school. This was at the end of the seventh book. He's also nervous that he'll get, you know, placed into Slytherin. And Harry, even at that point, after everything he's gone through, he tells him, you know, there are great people that have come out of Slytherin, and it doesn't make you a bad person if you're placed into Slytherin, but you have a choice. When I got the sorting hat, I had a choice and I made my choice. And you can also have that choice of which part of you decide to let shine. And I think it's very empowering, especially for kids to hear, because you this age range, you're confronted with so many choices at all times, and you're trying to figure out your identity and who do I want to be. And I think just remembering that you're not stuck, it's not all predetermined. At any given moment, you can start over and decide which part of you is gonna rule the day.
And it's okay if even recently you've made mistakes. Like, it's okay, you know, like you're not a bad person because of it. You always have the choice to rise above. So another theme in Harry Potter is life and pain. And one of my favorite quotes is that time will not slow down when something unpleasant lies ahead. And I think definitely I remember in dating when a date's coming and you're like dreading it. And like time is just going so, you know, like going slow, so slow or so fast. There, it actually is such a, it's a very funny quote, but a very real quote. You know, when something unpleasant lies ahead, sometimes we have to just kind of face it. I remember when I was a senior in college, I was applying to extremely competitive PhD programs. And I was taking like a ton of courses, and I was really, really very stressed out. And I remember telling myself, okay, Raquel, you have to get from point A to point B. Like, you have to graduate this year, and you have to do all your applications, and you have to just figure everything out. You can either get there in a good way, or you can kind of just want just life to go super quickly and zoom out of it and kind of detach yourself so that you just kind of get there. And I made the choice, and probably my senior year was one of my best years in college. And, you know, yes, you're going to get to point B. You know, you have to get there. Like, time will speed up, but how you get there is your choice. And this is why I love talking about embracing your journey and loving yourself and making the most of your journey, even in dating. Unfortunately, we don't always know when the end is of the dating period. And that's probably the hardest part, but you have a choice of how you get from point A to point B. You could try to fast forward time and just be miserable the whole time, or say, okay, I'm going to try my best to enjoy the ride.
100%. Because these are years, months, weeks, days of your life, moments of your life.
You'll never get back.
You'll never get it back. And you don't want to look back, whether this takes you a few months or a few years, and say, oh, I was a wreck that whole time. Why? You're going to end up where you're going to end up anyway. You could have had a beautiful time the whole way through.
And in a way, this kind of connects to the next quote, which is numbing the pain for a while will make it worse when you finally feel it. Which is also just an amazing quote by Albus Dumbledore. And sometimes, listen, there is a defense mechanism where sometimes we say, I can't currently right now deal with the pain. It is too strong for me. Like, I need to go to a magical place. I'm going to read Harry Potter and just kind of escape life for a little bit. But at some point, we have to process what's happening in our life. And numbing it for a while, it's not going to help you in the long run. It will make it harder when you finally feel it.
Because it's all going to come full force all at once, instead of having chosen to process it in a normal span of time.
You know, kind of related to what we were discussing about making the most of your journey is this quote, which is, happiness can be found even in the darkest of times if one only remembers to turn on the light. I think it's also a very Hasidic type of
very quote. Hasidic comment, yeah.
Which is the idea of you can always bring light. And by the way, when we're saying this, we're not trying to downplay when people go through hard things. Every single person has gone through very difficult things. And it's definitely hard in moments of darkness to remember this. But I think it's powerful to know that it is possible.
I'll make a comment on the Hasidic aspect of it. Someone once asked one of the Chabad Rebbeim, I don't remember which one, like, what isn't Hasidus a problem? You're bringing something new into Judaism that wasn't there before. And the Rav gave this mashal that where there's no changing the Torah, obviously there's no adding to it or taking away from it. It's turning on a flashlight. It's taking the Torah and illuminating it in a way that it's brighter, and you can experience it in a much more lively, bright way without adding, without taking. It's the same Torah. Torah is Torah, but can you live it in a way that is so much more alive? And that was the point of Chassidus, which is what I love about this quote. Obviously, this is saying, you know, even in the darkest of times, but in any situation, whether it's dark or not as dark, how you approach it and the hashkafa you bring into it will totally change how you experience it. How bad does it really need to feel? You can illuminate something and take it for what it is and experience the pain, but it doesn't mean you have to suffer through it.
And I think also, I don't know how related it to us, but in my head, it kind of is related, which is sometimes we can look back at situations that didn't work out and there's still light in them, even if overall it was a dark relationship or a bad thing. And that's okay. You know, I think sometimes when people are dealing with like breakups and stuff like that, they feel like they have to remember the person in a very negative way. And you don't have to. Like, it could be a situation that had to end that ultimately wasn't light, but there are sparks of light everywhere. If not, you wouldn't have stayed to begin with.
And you wouldn't have experienced it if it wasn't something you were meant to learn from.
So one of like, probably the funnest characters is Luna Lovegood, who is a Ravenclaw, but she's kind of half a puppy. You know what I mean? and she has one quote at the end, which she says, you know, things we lose have a way of coming back to us in the end, if not always the way we expect. It's a very profound quote, especially from her, because she's so like floaty and kind of like in Lala world. But it is deep, you know, especially in relationships, which is kind of like the focus of this podcast. If something is meant for you, it will come back to you. It does come back.
I remember a lot of these stories. I think they had dated originally and then broke up and then dated other people and then like found their way back to each other. And then there's a lot of stories like that. I'm not saying set store by that. And like, if you're pining for someone that you dated, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to come back. But if it's meant to, it will. And if it's not meant to, it won't.
And you still have to kind of close that door fully.
Right.
Yeah. But if it's meant to be, you know, it will come back.
And she says, if not always in the way we expect. And I think that's because we're constantly evolving and other people are constantly evolving. So in a different timeline, we are different and other people are different. And we can't predict what that's going to look like in the future. So even if there's something we're not ready for right now, it doesn't mean we won't be ready for it in the future.
Talking about this whole thing, how like Luna said, you know, what's meant for you will come back for you. Sometimes in life, things happen and then you're like, that makes no sense, but it's like meant to be. I actually remember Ellie, when after you went on a first date with your husband, you meant to say no.
Yes.
And he heard the words yes. No. And then you were like, fine, I guess I'll go out again. And then lo and behold, you're married. So it's just funny how sometimes it works out like that.
It's so true. I mean, even agreeing to the first date, like we both thought we were too firm for the other. Like it took a long time to even get to the first date because we were not sure if it was going to work out.
And then after that first date, you're like, no, it's a no for me. And then he was like, okay, cool, I hear yes. And then you went out again. So what's
and after the second date, I was like, oh, okay, let's do it.
Yeah. What's meant for you always comes back to you. So there's actually a quote Dumbledore says to Harry, time has made a fool of us again, Harry. And I feel like we could literally speak about Harry Potter for hours. We didn't even finish all the quotes that I had put together. But I want to end off discussing our favorite Harry Potter quotes.
Dumbledore says, people find it far easier to forgive others for being wrong than being right.
Wow. Um,
And I think that cuts to the core of like how much we let our ego get in our way sometimes, that we want to dig in and we don't want the other person to be right. And it's much easier, you know, if they apologize and we're like, it's okay, I forgive you for being wrong, versus if they're right, it's so hard. It's connected to a different quote, I think, from like Tony Robbins, that's like, do you want to be right or do you want to be married? Sometimes it's not about being right. It's about prioritizing your relationship.
I would say most of the time, it's not about being right. I remember my Kala teacher told me that she once saw like a bumper sticker in Israel, be smart, not right. And she was saying how, like, you know, when you're driving and you're like, but I'm right, like, it's my right of way to go. Yeah, but the car's coming.
Hey, you'll get into a car accident.
Yeah, like be smart. I actually love how you kind of connected that. So I actually have two favorite Harry Potter quotes, and I could not choose one. It would be too difficult. So one of them is at the end of the seventh book, Harry Potter and Albus Dumbledore having a conversation. And what is this quasi in between life and death? You know, a part of him has died. The part that is from Voldemort has died. And they're having this conversation. At the end of the conversation, he says to him, is this real or is this happening inside my head? Harry asks Dumbledore. And Albus Dumbledore says, of course it's happening inside your head, Harry. But why on earth should that mean that it's not real? I love this quote. Yeah, so many times we think like, what's real versus what's in my head? And ultimately, it doesn't matter. If it's in your head, it's real for you. If you are experiencing it, it's real for you. If something bothered you, it doesn't matter if it's real. To you, it felt real. Yeah, you have to process how that feels, but I think it's so important to be aware of your feelings and not have to justify them. You know, if something hurt you or upset you in a relationship, it hurt you and upset you. Whether you were wrong or right, you still have to process those emotions versus saying, oh, it wasn't real, let me just push it aside.
I love that. It's very self-affirming. And it goes back to this theme of just being yourself and being authentic and allowing space for what you're experiencing and what you're feeling as being real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've actually used this quote with coaching clients. And I've said to them, you know, just because it's happening in your head doesn't mean it's not real. You're struggling through it. Accept that. That's the first part, is to say, this is real to me. Whether I'm right or wrong, or I have to kind of adjust, that's like a next, you know, question. So my second favorite Harry Potter quote, and I literally could cry just like reading this line. So Severus Snape, who's probably the most misunderstood character, is actually a good guy. Right, he was really trying to protect Harry throughout because of the love that he had for Harry's mother. So he and Harry's mother, Lily, knew each other since they were children. He always loved her. And at the end, when he's you know, speaking to Albus Dumbledore, and he says, you know, you're going to have to tell Harry that he has to basically give himself into Voldemort. And he says, what? Like, this whole time I protected him to save him, and you're telling him that he has to, like, give himself up? So he says, do you still love her? Like, he couldn't believe it, you know? And he says, Albus Dumbledore says, after all this time? And Snape just says one word, always. And I find that word to be so powerful. I honestly quote it all the time, especially in my status, when I say always, and it has like a deeper meaning for me, which is, you know, it's not just forever. When you say forever or until the end of time, it's kind of like this, like, abstract. Always is at every moment.
I mean,
like, it's constant. Like, he always loved her. Every single day of his life, he felt this love for her. And my dream, my wish, my bracha to all of us is that we are always in love with ourselves. So we are constantly aware of our relationship with ourselves and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of course. And it's not just, oh yeah, forever, I'll love you to the end of time, but it's a constant, always in love.
It makes it present, is right now, in the present.
Yeah. And actually, in an interview, J.K. Rowling said how she told the actor who played Severus Snape, she had given him like a clue, because this was at the end of the book revealed, like, you know, when they started filming the movies, the books weren't finished. And they when he passed away, they asked her, like, what did you tell him? And she said, the meaning behind the word always. And I actually loved how she said that
Beautiful.
because she didn't tell us what she actually said. What she was saying is she explained what that word always meant, which was this, constant thing.
That's so beautiful. What a way to end.
What a way to end. Thank you again, Ellie, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I hope that everybody here enjoyed their butter beer while they were listening to the magical relationship advice from Harry Potter. And Mirza Hashem, we should all find our always.